Capital Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green and Sams, saluting its client Seaside Community Development Corporation for supporting arts and culture in South Walton County. I'm David Powell of Hopping Green and Sams in Tallahassee.
The Able Trust, encouraging businesses to hire someone with a disability. More information about the benefits of hiring people with a wide range of abilities is available on the web at lookatmyability.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. And from the Florida Historic Capital Museum, presenting Navigating New Worlds, Identity, Perception, and Politics in Florida, an exhibit showcasing rare maps and prints from the Michael W. and Dr. Linda Fisher collection. Information at flhistoriccapital.gov. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida Supreme Court says state employees will have to keep contributing extra to their retirement accounts, but what will the legislature do with the savings?
We hope that the governor and legislature will now take the reserve money that they say they were holding aside and will give more than lip service to rewarding the public employees.
Another overhaul of Florida's election laws is coming as reform proposals are getting bipartisan support.
There's really a moment here for Florida to offer penance for the legislative session it had last year and seize this opportunity to become a national model.
Republican lawmakers are slowly coming around to the idea of implementing the Federal Affordable Care Act. And we hear how lawmakers are trying to crack down on illegal massage parlors. I'm Tramell Gomes, and that's all coming up on Capitol Report. State employees will have to keep paying 3% of their salaries to their own retirement following a change to the law in 2011 that sparked the legal challenge. Regan McCarthy reports the effort to stop the payments has been quashed by the Florida Supreme Court, which finds the law requiring the payments to be constitutionally sound.
After lawmakers passed a measure in 2011 that would require state employees to contribute 3% of their salary to their retirement, a number of groups launched an effort to get the law declared unconstitutional. But the Florida Supreme Court has upheld the law.
The decision isn't final because it's right. The decision is right because it's final. The Supreme Court is the last appeal we had on this constitutional issue. There are no federal questions in here. I'm often asked, can we take it further? The answer is no.
That's Florida Education Association lawyer Ron Meyer. The association spearheaded the court challenge against the law, and Meyer says the outcome doesn't bode well for state employees like teachers, law enforcement officers, and, full disclosure, public radio reporters that are associated with state universities. Meyer says he disagrees with statements from Florida leaders who are calling the ruling a good thing.
Well, I think it's a great day for Florida families if starvation is a good thing. The fact of the matter is, a school teacher, a policeman, a state worker, all of these public employees can scarcely afford a 3% reduction in their pay. All you have to do is talk to those workers and see what impact it has already had on them.
The average state employee earns about $50,000 a year, according to the site FloridaOpenGov, which is operated by the Foundation for Government Accountability. And Meyer points out some earn much less. It's a paycheck hit Vonda Richardson, the interim assistant director of extension at Florida A&M University, says she's not happy about, but is willing to accept.
On one hand, it's 3% that's taken out of our salaries in a time when, you know, economic conditions are kind of tight. But I do understand, I'm originally from Georgia, and typically their state employees do pay into their teachers' retirement, so it's not a foreign concept to me.
But Maite Ezquitia, Broward County's deputy attorney, says she took her retirement benefits into account when she decided to take a government job.
When I agreed to come to work for the state or for the county, you agree to a lower salary, and one of the reasons for that is because you were counting on this benefit, and you work so many years into the system, and then at a later point in time they change the rules of the game, and you still are at the lower salary than you would be if you were in the private industry.
If the court had ruled against the law, it would have left lawmakers with about a $2 billion budget hole to fill. So far, the state's collected almost $1 billion from state workers, and it's expected to collect about $1 billion more by the summer. So now, some like Florida Education Association attorney Meyer are saying that should free up some money for state employee raises.
We hope that the governor and legislature will now take the reserve money that they say they were holding aside to pay for this decision had it gone the other way, and will indeed give more than lip service to rewarding the public employees in this state.
And Florida Governor Rick Scott has already talked about the possibility of granting merit-based raises.
I'm going to propose a performance-based pay plan again this year for state workers, because I think that that it ought to be tied to how well they do. So I agree. I want to make sure that all state workers get paid fairly.
But some lawmakers say performance-based increases aren't enough for state workers who haven't seen a pay bump in about 7 years. A number of bills that would provide across-the-board increases for state employees have already been filed for the upcoming session, which begins in March. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
In the battle over how Florida runs its elections, Republicans and Democrats have largely been on opposite sides. But as Jessica Palumbo reports, lawmakers say everyone's getting on the same page as the governor releases his ideas for election reform.
The 2012 presidential election came after all House, Senate, and congressional districts had just been redrawn. It had Floridians voting on 12 constitutional amendments, along with local, state, and federal races. In the giant county of Miami-Dade, that meant voters had 139 ovals they could fill in on their ballots. Lee County Election Supervisor Sharon Harrington told a Senate committee it was all too much to handle.
It was obvious to us that it wasn't just one issue or another. It was a combination of things that have contributed to our perfect storm election.
Harrington and elections officials from several other counties have been offering their ground-level insights to the lawmakers on the Senate and House Ethics and Elections Committees. The testimony comes at the same time that Florida Governor Rick Scott is releasing his specific ideas for reform.
We got to make changes. Yeah. I agree.
First, Scott wants supervisors to have more flexibility to select more or larger early voting locations. He wants a shorter ballot with shorter summaries of proposed amendments. And finally, the governor wants the number of early voting days to remain at a minimum of 8 and let supervisors choose if they want up to 14. 2 years ago, he signed into law a package of election law reforms that had shortened the early voting time from 14 to 8 days. That shortening prompted a lawsuit from Jacksonville Congresswoman Corinne Brown and others, who said it effectively disenfranchised minority voters who typically vote early in a higher percentage than white voters do. In a meeting with the governor, members of the largely Democratic Legislative Black Caucus chastised Scott for signing that bill into law. Scott responded by blaming the legislature.
You know, the legislature passed, and I didn't have anything to do with passing that bill.
The law has been a huge point of contention between Republicans and Democrats, as lawsuits by the League of Women Voters and others have challenged it on the basis of voter suppression. But ranking Democrat on the House Ethics and Elections Committee, Janet Cruz of Tampa, says Scott's new proposals are a step in the right direction.
I don't think that they go far enough, but I think they're a good start.
She says she thinks the 14 days of early voting should be mandatory and not optional, and she wants to make it possible for voters to be able to change their address on voting day right at the polls. She says she looks forward to working with her Republican colleagues to make the changes.
I think this opens the door for some conversation. And as we sit in the Elections and Ethics Committee, we'll be able to work together to put forward a bill that all Floridians will be happy with.
After Scott released his recommendations, the League of Women Voters released a statement applauding him. Lee Rowland is a lawyer with the New York University's Brennan Center for Justice. She helped the Florida League mount its challenge against the state voting laws. She says it looks like Florida is about to right its wrongs.
There's really a moment here for Florida to offer penance for the legislative session it had last year and seize this opportunity to become a national model for election administration rather than a laughingstock.
The House and Senate committees will continue hearing testimony about what went wrong in the last election before releasing their bills. And House Speaker Will Weatherford has released a statement applauding Governor Scott for what he calls realistic reform proposals. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jessica Palumbo.
Still to come on Capitol Report, the mother of Trayvon Martin makes a plea to the legislature to repeal Florida's Stand Your Ground law.
We need to do something seriously about this law. As a parent, I wouldn't want you to stand in my shoes.
As lawmakers continue to weigh their options for implementing the Federal Affordable Care Act, business owners say they're still worried about how that law will affect them.
And I've got to tell you that I'm thoroughly confused, and I don't know what it's going to cost me next year.
Lawmakers are trying to crack down on illegal massage parlors to fight against human trafficking, but reputable massage businesses are concerned.
A number of our people in the metropolitan areas get calls for people like airline pilots, theater performers. They're on a different time clock than we are, so those people want to be able to continue doing their business lawfully.
And as Florida's budget picture improves, Florida Tax Watch tries to keep its cost-cutting ideas alive in the legislature.
The state general revenue is going to grow by about $1 billion. Why don't we double that or replicate it through savings in the budget?
The mother of Trayvon Martin and Democratic lawmakers are calling for the repeal of the state's so-called Stand Your Ground law. The bill to repeal the law comes nearly a year after Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman shot and killed the unarmed teen.
How many lives do we have to lose? How many children have to be killed?
Martin's mother, Sabrina Fulton, stood flanked by Democratic lawmakers who filed legislation to throw out Florida's first-in-the-nation law that says people can use deadly force if they feel threatened.
As a parent, I just don't quite understand how someone can be a make-believe cop, pursue my son, who had every right to be in that neighborhood, chase him, get in a confrontation with him, shoot and kill him, and not be arrested.
Nearly a year ago, Fulton's son, Trayvon Martin, was fatally shot by Neighborhood Watch volunteer George Zimmerman. He was eventually arrested 44 days after the shooting. Zimmerman is charged with second-degree murder, but is claiming self-defense under the law.
Something has to be done. We have to put our collective minds together, and we have to strategize, and we have to make changes to this law.
What Fulton is asking for was actually already done. Governor Rick Scott commissioned a 19-member task force in April to review the law, but during the 6 months of traveling the state, the group was heavily criticized for being packed with those who support the law. Here is Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Carroll, the chair of the task force, responding to critics in May.
Out of the 19 total members on this task force, I am unaware of the other 15 members' position on this law or if they favor or disfavor gun laws. So it is a mischaracterization for anyone to presume that this task force is not balanced.
In the end, the task force didn't come up with any major changes to the law. It mostly asked for the law enforcement community to do further review. Democratic Senator Dwight Bullard of Miami is co-sponsoring House Bill 4009 to repeal the 2005 Stand Your Ground law, saying the task force failed at its job.
We've been waiting for far too long and seen too many cities to watch this dog and pony show go around the state to come up with no recommendations. So we're taking a proactive stance right now, here in the state of Florida, to say that the law is an unjust law. What it is legalized vigilantism, and we can no longer, as a state, stand for this.
The original sponsor of Stand Your Ground, Republican Representative Dennis Baxley of Ocala, says overall the law does what it's supposed to, and that is protect would-be victims from violence.
Look at how many people it's prevented them being a rape victim, a victim of a beating, or be in a situation where they actually lost their life. I get emails and communications on all sides of this issue, and I always think of the person that we've protected from harm.
Baxley says he's not hearing a lot of support for a repeal of his law, but he's open to discussing and looking at ways to make improvements.
I understand the grief, but I think if you look at the public policy question, it's clear that what's happened is we've seen less violence and we've prevented a lot of people from being victims of violence.
Zimmerman and his legal team have maintained throughout the case that shooting the unarmed 17-year-old was a matter of self-defense and was not an intentional murder. February 5th would have been Trayvon Martin's 18th birthday. Now it's the day for his accused killer, George Zimmerman's, next court hearing. The state's legislators are wading through a swath of conflicting information trying to understand how the Affordable Care Act will affect Florida employers. There are three types of businesses addressed in the health care law: large employers that pay the cost of health care for their employees, large employers that purchase insurance, and small businesses. And as Lynn Hatter reports, there's a lot of confusion surrounding how each group is affected by the law.
Businesses are starting to see a bit of sticker shock as they renew their health insurance policies for their workers. Premiums are going up, and some say it's partly due to the federal health care law already in effect. Things like free birth control and no fees for primary care aren't cheap, and Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida insurance executive John Urbanek says those things still have to be paid for.
It's just a broader set of things to cover. So, of course, they sound good this way, but we just have to understand that they will add to the cost of these. So from a benefit standpoint, smaller employers, as it stands today, most will have to offer a lot richer benefits than they offer today.
Urbanek was part of a group of business representatives before Florida House and Senate committees looking at the impact of the Affordable Care Act. Under the law, employers with between 50 and 200 full-time workers must offer health insurance to those employees or pay fines. Employers with more than 200 workers must automatically enroll their employees in insurance plans. Justin Kindy, vice president of the human resources consulting firm Aon Hewitt, says he doesn't believe larger employers will see much of a difference in what they do now.
Depending on the Medicaid situation in that state, depending on the state exchange position in that state, I would hesitate to say that there's a universal answer that applies to everyone. I think that for the majority of employers, it's going to be pretty close to sort of status quo where they're at currently.
But while larger businesses may not see drastic changes, small businesses say they still have lots of concerns about what will happen to them under the health care law.
And I've got to tell you that I'm thoroughly confused, and I don't know what it's going to cost me next year.
Ken Williams is president of the Marpan Supply Company, a recycling business in Tallahassee. He's got about 74 employees, and about half of them get their insurance through company-sponsored plans. He's got a choice: continue to offer that insurance or pay a fine. But what if Williams and the Marpan Supply Company had fewer than 50 full-time employees? Under the federal health care law, businesses with fewer than 50 full-time workers are exempt from the law's penalties. They don't have to offer insurance to their workers, a point that was raised by Republican Senator Aaron Bean.
Very good. But other employers, you could still just have part-time employees that could still not be required to provide benefits for.
Yes, I'm sorry, Senator. 30 hours is...
No, and I understand that. And that may be where they turn, a place they turn to help afford the new burdens that our federal government is putting on small business. Thank you.
Lawmakers say they're worried some businesses will drop coverage and choose to pay the fines if those fines are cheaper than the cost of insuring workers. But the federal government did write in some incentive deals to get businesses to keep that coverage. A big one is health insurance tax credits, where employers can get money back for offering the plans. Many businesses have already taken advantage of the credits, but some say the tax breaks may not be enough to offset additional costs. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
You're listening to Capital Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tramell Gomes. Florida is one of the top states in the nation for human trafficking. And as Sasha Cordner reports, with Human Trafficking Awareness Month coming to a close, efforts are underway to continue trying to curb the practice, which includes putting more measures and penalties in place to shut down illegal massage parlors.
After drugs, humans are the second most trafficked item in the world. And this is all happening right in your own backyard. Who would ever have guessed such ugliness could live alongside such beauty?
That's a snippet of a video about human trafficking prepared by the Clearwater Human Trafficking Task Force. It's being watched by a group of lawmakers in the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee.
Yo vine el primer día en los Estados Unidos. Él me compró ropa.
The first day in the United States, he bought me some clothes and told me I had to have sex with these men. There were 25 men a day. I lived in a tiny room. You could hear us crying ourselves to sleep each night.
That young woman in the video is recalling how she was so desperate for money to feed herself and her young daughter, who she had at 15, that she went to the U.S. thinking she'd be cleaning houses, only to learn the man who had talked her into coming to this country was a human trafficker. Over the years, state lawmakers have been trying to clamp down on the practice. Last year, the legislature passed a comprehensive measure designed to enhance Florida's human trafficking laws, with new criminal penalties like making it a second-degree misdemeanor for a person to operate a massage parlor and they or their employees don't have a valid government ID. But despite that, lawmakers received reports that there are still some illegal massage establishments getting around the new law. Now the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee is working on a bill that would crack down on those massage parlors that are still places where prostitution and human trafficking can be found.
This bill is not a partisan issue. We have members in our community that are being subjected to a horrendous way of life, servitude, and sexual trafficking, and this bill is designed to prevent that.
Democratic Representative Dave Kerner is one of the measure's sponsors. The bill prohibits a person operating a massage parlor to live or allow workers to live at the business. It also makes it a first-degree misdemeanor to operate a massage establishment between the hours of 10 and 6 a.m., when human trafficking is likely to happen. Some lawmakers worry about the impact this would have on legitimate massage businesses, but chair of the House committee, Republican Representative Matt Gaetz, says the bill allows for some exceptions.
If there are folks who are legitimately conducting their business, if they're legitimately conducting their business late into the evening at a hospice facility, a hospital, a hotel establishment that has an ancillary license, at the direction of a physician that may tell a pilot or someone who works at a restaurant and gets off late and then needs therapeutic massage, our intent with the legislation is to ensure that that activity will continue without abridging that commerce.
Still, one of the biggest proponents of the bill, the massage industry itself, argue the time frame needs to be broadened. Here's Florida State Massage Therapy Association Legislative Director Alex Bassoff.
We're looking at maybe from midnight to 5 a.m. A number of our people in the metropolitan areas, they've got calls for people like airline pilots, theater performers, entertainers who travel, who come in late, international travelers who come in from overseas at a late hour. They're on a different time clock than we are. So those people want to be able to continue doing their business lawfully.
Spassoff says they're also going to be working with lawmakers to put more procedures in place so law enforcement and prosecutors have the tools they need to identify legitimate versus illegitimate massage parlors. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Finally, a few months before each lawmaking session, Florida Tax Watch rolls out its wish list of cost-cutting measures for state government. Tom Flanagan reports this year is no exception, although a brightening economy may have reduced the need for lawmakers to cut expenses.
On the very same day Tax Watch came out with its 2013 list of recommendations, the Florida Supreme Court gave the organization a huge boost. The High Court, as Tax Watch had urged in a pleading called an amicus brief, upheld the requirement that Florida retirement system participants kick 3% of their salaries into the pension plan. To say Tax Watch President and CEO Dominic Calabro was a happy guy would be a vast understatement.
At the end of the day, the taxpayers benefit, but also the core functions of state and local government benefit. It is now a pat of encouragement for us to go in and further reform and bring it into balance, not only our state retirement system, but also our state health benefit.
Calabro says TaxWatch suggests moving state employee health plans from the current defined benefit plan to a defined contribution setup. As things are now, employees pick a health plan, such as an HMO. They pay a fixed rate for that coverage each month, which is a fraction of the total cost. The employer makes up the difference. Calabro says a defined contribution plan is better.
You say, okay, we'll give you $8,000 or $10,000 or $12,000 for you or your family. Go forward and pick what makes best sense for you rather than have the state pay for things that you're never going to use.
More choice for state workers, Calabro says, and a lot of savings for the state, somewhere north of $380 million a year. That's the biggest single savings suggestion in the new Tax Watch Task Force recommendations. Second biggest is halting the use-it-or-lose-it spending rush so many state agencies indulge in towards the end of every fiscal year. Calabro says that would save the state around $230 million a year. Using electronic monitoring instead of locking up minor criminals, about $100 million a year savings. Calabro says the 25-member Task Watch Task Force also looked at the revenue side of the state ledger.
When we say revenue enhancement, we're talking about the remote sales tax, where the law requires the people to pay the use tax, sales and use tax, when they buy online or from mail order from remote sellers that don't have a presence in Florida. That is an issue that will bring in about $60 million.
TaxWatch has been pushing the idea of the remote sales tax for several years, but a tax-averse legislature has pretty much ignored the idea. Calabro admits many of its suggestions last year suffered the same fate.
2012 was not as successful. The state only implemented about $400 to $500 million. That's a lot of money. It's something to look a gift horse in the mouth over, but relative to the size of what we had offered, it was small pickings.
What about the prospects for TaxWatch's $1.2 billion savings plan for 2013?
The state general revenue of the state is going to grow by about $1 billion. Why don't we double that or replicate it through savings in the budget? We're going to have rising costs for Medicaid. We're going to have rising costs for the federal health care laws. We have rising demands, and the governor's made a commitment, as has the legislature, to not only restore some cuts in the past for kindergarten through 12th grade public education, but also with some enhancements to attract and nurture excellent teachers and especially great principals.
The principal question remaining, though, with the budget-cutting pressure of the past several years finally gone, how inclined will lawmakers be to stay in frugal mode? For Florida Public Radio, I'm Tom Flanagan.
Our regular Capital Report correspondents are Sasha Kordner, Tom Flanagan, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Jessica Palumbo. Thanks also to public radio stations around the state. Ken Smith provided technical assistance for Capital Report, and I'm Tramell Gomes, inviting you to join us next week for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capital Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809, extension 358. You can also hear Capital Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org.
Capital Report is underwritten in part by Hopping Green & Sams, saluting its client Seaside Community Development Corporation for supporting arts and culture in South Walton County. I'm David Powell of Hopping Green & Sams in Tallahassee.
The Able Trust, helping donors make a difference through planned giving, putting donations to work so people with disabilities can too, on the web at abletrust.org. The Able Trust, because people want to work. And from the Florida Historic Capitol Museum, illuminating the connection between the people of Florida and their political institutions through programs of civic education, historic interpretation, and preservation. Information at 850-487-1902. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.